Chapter 8. We traveled for 7 hours through the night to the end of a range of mountains. In front of us, there was a deserted moor that we had to cross. It was early morning when we reached the desert. There was a thin mist covering the moorland like smoke. Alan was right. We sat down in the dip of a hillside until the mist had cleared. We ate our breakfast while we waited and made our battle plans. "What should we do, David?" Alan asked me. "Shall we lie here until night and then go across the moors? Or shall we risk it now and move forward quickly?" "Well, I am tired from our night of travelling, but I could walk as far again if that was all," I replied. "But it's not. Not even half as far as we need to go. This is what we face. Appin's lands are death to us. To the south, the lands belong to the Campbells and are death to us as well. There is nothing to gain going north, so we have to go east." Alan laid out everything for me. "East is the moors, and once we are on them, there is nowhere to hide. If the redcoats come over the hill, they will see us and ride us down on their horses. It's not a good place, David, and it's worse by daylight than it is by dark," Alan sighed. "The longer we wait, the closer the redcoats come. We have not much money or food left. It's all a risk, but I give you my word that I will go until we drop," I replied. "I love you like a brother," Alan smiled at me. The mist soon cleared and we could see the moors below. There were some birds and deer moving across it, some red heather bogs and peat pools and burnt out patches where heath fire had burned. It was a desert, but it was free of troops for the moment, which was our main concern. We made our way down to the wastes and began our journey eastward. There were mountaintops all around us that anyone could be looking down at us from, so it was right for us to keep to the hollow parts of the moor. Sometimes it would take us half an hour to crawl from one heather bush to the next. It was a clear and sunny day, and the water that we carried in the brandy bottle finished before midday. When we found a thick bush of heather, Alan took the first watch and let me sleep. When I woke up, it was Alan's turn to sleep, but I was so tired that I fell asleep immediately. When I woke again, it was with a start. The sun had moved a lot further across the heavens, and as I looked out from the heather, I nearly cried aloud. I had betrayed my friend, and there was a gang of soldiers on horses drawing closer to where we lay. I woke Alan as quickly and as quietly as I could. My friend looked at the horseman, the sun, and then frowned at me. This was the only reproach I received from him. "What should we do now?" I asked. "We have to pretend to be hares. Do you see the mountains?" he asked, pointing to the one that was against the northeastern sky. "Yes," I nodded. "We're going there. It's a wild desert mountain full of hills and hollows. If we can reach it before the morning, we might yet be safe," Alan said. "But we'll have to go in front of the horsemen," I said. "I know, but if we're driven back to Appin, we are dead. You must be quick," Alan replied. The next moment, Alan was running forward on his hands and knees with such speed that it would be easy to think that it was his natural way of moving. He wound his way between the lower parts of the moorland, staying hidden. I followed him as quickly as I could, mimicking him as I went. We didn't have any water left, and moving so quickly hurt our joints, so that every time we reached a clump of thick heather, we paused to rest for a few minutes before moving on. We took the time to look at the dragoons from the heather to make sure that they hadn't seen us. I was so worn out that the only thing that kept me going was my fear of Alan. We didn't stop at all for the rest of the day. As the night got closer, one of the soldiers blew his trumpet, and the dragoons came together to make camp at the center of the moor. We didn't stop moving through the night, even though I begged Alan to let me stop and rest for a few hours. He kept pushing us on, as he knew that we wouldn't be safe until we reached the mountain called Ben Alder. It got cooler as the sun went down, which made it easier for us to run. Heavy dew fell like rain, which helped to refresh us for a while. When we stopped to rest again, the fire was a spot on the horizon of the vast moor. As the next day was dawning, we were away from the greatest danger and could walk properly again, though we were both stumbling along like toddlers and looked as white as corpses. We didn't talk as we went. All our energy was spent just moving forwards. We were both so tired that neither of us saw that we were walking into an ambush. One moment we were walking, and the next, four men leapt from the heather, pushed us to the ground, and held knives at our throats. Alan spoke to one of the men in Gaelic. When they were done, their weapons were put away and ours were taken. They sat us in the heather and we waited. They are Clooney's men. We've landed on our feet now. We just have to wait while one of the men goes to tell him that I am here, Alan told me. Clooney MacPherson was the clan chief of Vurrich and had been one of the leaders of the Great Rebellion. I thought that he was with the other leaders in France, but even with a price on his head, he hadn't left Scotland. I wanted to ask Alan so many questions about Clooney, but a moment later, he was lying in the heather fast asleep. I tried to sleep, but I couldn't, so I watched Clooney's men. When the messenger came back, we were taken to Clooney. The clan chief was only too happy for us to come to him. Alan was cheerful after sleeping so well and looking forward to the food and drink of Clooney's table. We went up the mountain until we reached a strange house. It was called Clooney's Cage, and it was surrounded by barricades and stakes for protection. The house was large enough for six men to live there in comfort, and the cliff behind it was used to hide the smoke rising from the fireplace. This was only one of Clooney's hiding places. He had caves and underground chambers all over his country. When his scouts brought him reports, he moved from one to the other until the soldiers left. "Welcome, Mr. Stewart, and to your friend," Clooney greeted us. "How are you, Clooney? I'm proud to see you looking so well. This is my friend, Laird of Shaws, Mr. David Balfour." Alan never talked of my estate to me with anything but scorn. However, when he introduced me to people, he told them as if it were a great announcement he had to make. "Come in, both of you. We must eat and drink. Dinner is nearly ready," Clooney said, and he took us into the house. "A toast to you, the Restoration," he cried, as he gave each of us something to drink. We ate together, and Clooney told us of Bonnie Prince Charlie's visit to the cage. After dinner, Alan and Clooney played cards, but I went to bed. I was not only tired, but had never played cards in my life. I was in bed for 3 days. The journey had made me weak and I was quite ill, so I had the chance to rest. Clooney's scouts came to report that the south was clear, and he asked if I was strong enough to travel. When I said that I was, Clooney made arrangements to take us across the loch to another hiding place at the head of Loch Rannoch. One of Clooney's men took us, and when we reached Lord Loch Rannoch, he told us the best route to take south. The route he gave us took us through Campbell Lands. Alan was not pleased about it, but the scout knew it was by far the safest route to travel, and there was nothing Alan could say to argue against it. We set off along the route and travelled for 3 nights over mountains with wild rivers and layers of mist. During the day we slept in damp heather, we ate cold meat and drammock and never lit a fire. For the first time in our journey, though, we were not short of water. These 3 nights in the damp made me sick again, and I was so ill that I wished I were dead. Alan had begun to taunt me until I could take it no more. I was so sick that I knew I was going to die, and I wanted to have it out with Alan before I did. I shouted at him. I said things I knew that would make him want to kill me, and then I drew my sword on him and attacked. But even though Alan was angry with me, and I with him, he couldn't bring himself to fight or hurt me. He drew his sword and threw it on the ground. As he did this, all my anger disappeared, and I was left feeling sorry and sick. "Alan, if you can't help me, then I must die here," I said. Alan looked at me with shock. I hadn't told him I was ill, and he had been taunting me the whole time. "Can you walk?" he asked me with concern. "No, not without help," I said. "For the last hour, my legs have been giving up and fainting under me. I have a stitch in my side which gives me so much pain. If I die here, will you forgive me, Alan? In my heart, I love you like a brother, even when I am angry with you." "What is all this? Don't talk like that. Let me help you. Let me put my arm around you. That's the way. Now lean on me. I can take all your weight. We're nearly through these mountains. When we get to Bolwidder, we will have many friends who can help us," he asked me. "It is, if I can keep going like this," I told him, and pressed his arm, my hand. I heard him sob again. "David, I'm not a good man at all. I don't have any sense or kindness. I never thought that you were just a boy and needed to be looked after. I couldn't even see that you were dying on your feet, David. You have to try and forgive me," Alan said, managing to keep from crying, but not by much. "Please, let us say no more about. Neither one of us is perfect, We have been together through so much, we must just forgive each other. But my side hurts so much. Is there no house we can stop at? I asked. The stitch in my side seemed to get worse with every step that we took. I will find you a house, David, Alan said to me. We'll follow this trail down to where there must be some houses. My poor friend, would it be better if I carried you on my back? He asked. But I am 12 inches taller, I cried. You are no such thing. You are an inch or two at most, but I think you'll be all right without me carrying you, Alan said. Oh, Alan, what makes such a sweet and kind man be so good to me? What makes you care about me when I'm such a thankless fellow? I asked. Indeed, I couldn't tell you. I thought that I liked you because we never fought, even after all we went through, but I find I like you even more now than before, Alan laughed.